Hello, everyone. This is Michael McCurdy from TestyMom.com, and I have today with me Karen Quinn, the Testy Mom. Hi, Karen.
Hi. Hi, everybody.
Hey, welcome, everyone, to our teleseminar this afternoon. We're going to be answering all the questions that we received over the last week. We received several questions, and we'll hit the highlights of these questions. We can't get to all of them just because we've gotten so many. But we will, over the next, every teleseminar that we do have, we will be addressing parents' questions as we get closer to the testing season, which is actually the first OLSAT test for those here in New York City will be taking place on January 8th. And the testing takes place in January all the way through the end of February. So the first question here, Karen, we had a question from a parent, and it says, thank you for these fun activities. They've been very helpful for me and my four-year-old daughter. I also wanted to know what kind of activities can I do for my four-year-old to improve her verbal skills and her vocabulary?
Okay. Well, that's a great question. Since I know that you are a 5% or 1% member, I know you either have a copy of Testing for Kindergarten or you'll be getting one. And so the first thing I would just recommend is when you get the book is to go to chapters 8, 10, and 11, because those chapters in Testing for Kindergarten will give you just tons of ideas for building verbal skills and vocabulary. But a few things that are good for you to do, the biggest thing I think is when you're with your child is just talk to her all the time. And you just talk about everything and anything when you're walking, when you're out and about. And you try to make it a conversation as opposed to just you just talking and doing a running commentary. So notice what interests her and jump on those things and create a conversation around those things. Because children that are brought up in high language households have IQ scores that are like, I don't know, I think it's like 38 points higher than children brought up in low language households. You want to read to her, use the dialogic reading techniques that I talk about in the book on pages, I think, 80 and 81, which means you don't just read the words, but you might ask her questions about what you're seeing, or you might ask her to predict what might happen next. Using that, the dialogic reading is very, very helpful in building language, verbal skills, and vocabulary. Whenever you do read to her, if there's a word you don't think she knows, ask her about it. And something that's really good to do is pick up some of those wordless picture books, like Goodnight or Good Dog Carl or Goodnight Gorilla, and let her read those books to you. That's a great way for her to build her vocabulary and her comprehension skills. And the last suggestion that I have is to start reading age-appropriate nonfiction books to her, because these are also great for building vocabulary and for building inferential skills that they need for testing and for school.
Okay, that's great. And the next question here, and if anyone's on the phone, please, you have a question while we're talking, you can chime in at the appropriate place. Please just make sure you are not muted. The next
How do you unmute Karen, yourself if you are muted?
It looks like, if you're muted, if you mute yourself on your own phone. So everyone who logs in should be unmuted. But if you're muted on your line, just go ahead and unmute yourself. The next question here, are there any tips for helping a child used to the listening questions on the OLSAT? They seem to have been so, They seem to have so many parts. And on the testing day, they can't be repeated, even though I have been repeating part of the questions in practice. Should the child cross wrong ones off as they listen the first time? Should they then try to memorize the questions? Should they be looking at all four pictures while the question is being read? Any way to conquer these three or four parts of the question? And the question she's talking about, she gives an example here. The question is, point to the black cat that's next to the tree between the two white cats with the bells on their neck.
I tell you, these are really hard questions. I mean, I'm sure
that I don't
even know how I would answer these. I have such a terrible memory myself. but go ahead. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. So, and then we can, these are hard.
I think it's Yeah, they're very difficult. I mean, as everyone knows, the OLSAT test is an extremely difficult test. And for those here in the New York City area, the test proctor can only read the question once to the child and one time only. There cannot be any redirection on the test. So the main thing is to really build up the test stamina of your child, but also figure out the best way your child learns. So is your child more visually oriented, or does your child, he or she, listen better? So one of the strategies going into it is figuring out, okay, if your child like is a really good listener, looking at the person while they're actually saying the question could actually be a good strategy, because the child listens, they're looking at the person's face, and then they can look down and focus on the picture. Now, if your child's more visually oriented, they like pictures, they're really into the visual piece, what you may want to practice with is them focusing on their while they're listening to you actually say the question, the practice question, and really figure out which way your child best responds to those. And I would try those two different strategies to see. One of those you'll definitely probably see a difference in the way your child responds and their answers, to make sure that they give accurate answers. The main thing on the listening questions is practice listening also in your daily life. So as you're doing something, or if you're at the store and the store clerk says something to you, then you leave the store. You can ask your child, well, what did the store clerk just say to us? Or you're at a restaurant and the waiter or waitress says something to you, and then the waiter and waitress leaves. Have your child repeat what they just heard, and really practice the listening skills incorporated in your daily life, not just when you're practicing these types of questions. You really want your child to hear, listen, and if your child's not a good listener, remind them to listen during just regular activities during the day, especially as you're, telling them things like in the morning, it's time to eat breakfast, just say, okay, what did I just ask? And just have them repeat, even if it's just a simple task. It's really getting your child to listen and to focus. And always remember, your child, the test proctor cannot redirect the child on these tests. And for a four-year-old, sitting still through this test can be very, very difficult, especially if it's a little boy. Little boys seem to be a little more fidgety than girls. So the main thing is to build up the test stamina. Again, the OLSAT Bracken test can last anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour and a half. And that's a long time for a four-year-old to sit, or even up to a seven- or eight-year-old for that matter. So that would be my advice on that. Karen, did you have any insights?
No, I think that's actually really good advice. And to really, when you're practicing the questions with them, get a better sense of, do they do better when they're looking at the picture, or do they do better when they're looking at you and really listening carefully to what you say and go back to the picture. And then once you've figured that out, then you can start to direct them. Now, when I ask you this question, really look at the picture while I'm talking, if that's the way they learn best, and let them practice with you doing it that way. I think that is a really good piece of advice. And also really practicing listening in everyday life. That's just so important for this test.
Okay, great. The next question here, Karen, this one probably answer for us. It's an ERB question. Should I mention to my child's ERB teacher that my child also recently sat for the Stanford-Binet? I was just wondering, because knowing my chatty child, she might mention her prior testing experience, that she took a test with so-and-so last week, or when she gets a series of questions which are on both tests, like vocabulary, matrix questions, etc., saying she knows how to do these problems without instruction, which could smell like prep to the tester.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. I would say for that, I would definitely mention to the ERB tester that they recently sat for the Stanford-Binet. I think that's really a good idea to do. And it's actually very common this time of year for a child to have taken both of those tests in a pretty short period of time, at least in the area of New York, where different schools have different requirements. So it's not at all uncommon, but I think it would be very, very smart to just mention, oh yeah, she just took the Stanford-Binet a couple of weeks ago, so that if any of that comes up, there's no issue. And so I would do that. I think that's a good idea.
Right, and I have talked to a placement advisor who was a placement advisor in a very predominant private school here in New York City. And she was a placement advisor, I think, for 10 years or so. And
yeah.
Now she does private consulting on the side. And she indicated that she has never seen any ERB test results come back that indicated the child had been prepped. So, I mean, not saying that's 100% foolproof, but this is what she told me, and she would know because she, you know, was
yeah.
an actual placement advisor in the school. So it's something to consider. I think it would have to be pretty obvious that your child had been prepped for the ERB person who administers the test to actually note it. I mean, most of the things that you're going to do to prepare your child aren't necessarily like pure prep, unless your child hears the word prep for some reason and pieces it all together. But this should be interaction that you're doing with your child on a daily basis that actually incorporates daily routine, daily life experiences, which aren't all these things that you're working with child on aren't even, you know, they're great for the test, but they're also great for just, you know, general education that your child needs to know going into kindergarten, first, second mm-hmm. grade, et cetera. So these are the things that you should be working on with your child, you know, even after the OLSAT, even after the Stanford-Binet, ERB, et cetera. And that would be my advice on that one.
Yeah, I think that's
next,
right. Yeah, go ahead.
The next question here is, could you provide guidance on constructing a new cover story for the reason my child is taking another test so close in time to the first test? She seemed to buy the story the first time that the nice teacher wanted to see everything that a four-year-old knows. But do I even try to use the same story again this time? I'd imagine she'd find that fishy.
That's cute. I guess that is a good question. It's like, Mom, why are we doing this again? Another teacher wants to know how smart I am. I think what you might try saying is, you might just say, you did such a great job last time that the teacher just said you did such good work. That another teacher who's trying to find out how much, you know, four-year-olds know really wants to work with you. So would you be, you know, so let's go show her how much four-year-olds know and how much you know, because you just did such a wonderful job last time. And that might even incent her to try to do even better this time, because she's being rewarded for how well she did. Now another teacher wants to see how much she knows. That's what I would do. What do you think, Mike?
That would be my advice as well. One thing you want to avoid, and I heard this from a parent, was they actually told their son mm-hmm. that they were going to go see, you know, the first tester or whatever her name was, Sue, hypothetically. So we're going to go see Sue's friend, Joyce. So the child went in there and said, oh, are you Sue's friend? And the test marker was like, no, you know, so you don't want to necessarily say that, you know, we're going to go see so-and-so's friend, just because you don't know what the child's going to say. And the test proctor may be like, what are you talking about? just something to consider going in there. I did hear that from a parent, I guess, about a month ago. And let's see. We have some other questions here, Karen. We'll zip through these real quick. I had a question from someone who's moving to New York City from upstate.
Okay.
And they wanted to know the process. I actually met this person at one of the DOE information sessions here in New York City. And he has two children applying for the GNT program here in New York City. One thing you want to consider is if you are out of state and you are moving to New York City, is you need to have your address in place within one of the five boroughs. The New York City Department of Ed will require you to have proof of address in the city prior to taking the OLSAT. Now, if you're in the process of moving to the city and you don't have a permanent address yet, you will have to most likely take the OLSAT next summer during the summer testing period, unless you can get, you know, a residency certificate within the next prior to any testing starting. So one thing to remember, if you know you're moving to New York City, New York City does require that you have proof of residency in the city, in one of the five boroughs. So one of the things to really consider is, and they do require like original documentation. Even if we're just getting into a regular school, they require original documentation, and they require like multiple proofs of documentation of where you live. So they're pretty strict here. So you want to make sure that you have all the documentation in line And then they'll let you sign up for the test and register for the test. And again, the OLSTAT tests for here in New York City, the deadline, I believe, is it's coming up on the 17th. So next week, you only have a few more days to actually sign up. So I'm sure everyone on the phone has already done so. But if you haven't, please make sure that you sign up on the DOE site. And if you do miss the deadline, you will have to wait for the summer testing. And we can get into summer testing in a future future teleseminar, because there's some interesting dynamics that go on with the summer testing here in New York City that I can give parents insights on. Did you have anything to add to that, Karen? Or?
No, that's pretty good. So I think that's fine. That's tricky if you're moving into New York, though, because you probably don't have a place yet. So that is tricky for people.
Yeah, it is. It's really tricky, and because parents want, a lot of times people will know in advance they're moving to the city,
yeah,
but they just haven't found a place yet.
Right.
The next question I had here, Karen, was what schools do children take the GMAT test for pre-K, and what happens at the school? You'll be notified once you sign up on the DOE site. They will notify you of the school that you will be taking the test in. Usually it's in the school that's usually in a school within your school district. It might not be the local PS school that may be like down the street or across the street from where you live. And you'll just follow the instructions from the DOE from the DOE site. And they will give you specific instructions on when to show up, what to do, et cetera, when you arrive at the school. One thing to consider, and this is for children who aren't in the public school system yet. So if your child is in pre-K in a public school, they will actually be administered the OLSAT at the school that they attend the pre-K in. And you'll get a notification saying your child next week will be taking the OLSAT test, around 1 p.m. during class time. But they will be pulled out of the class, given a one-on-one administration of the test by a test proctor. And that's kind of how it works. So you'll be notified from the DOE exactly where you need to show up, where, when, et cetera. And if you are going to be taking the test at a school that your child's not familiar with, I always recommend the parents going to the school, playing on the playground with the child at least one or two times prior to the OLSAT test, just so the child is familiar with the surroundings and has a good experience prior to actually going into the testing situation at the school. The next question here.
Oh, Michael, let me ask you one question about that, because someone actually called me this week and asked me this question. I know that if the application is for kindergarten, it's always going to be one-on-one testing. But if it's for first grade or second grade or third grade, it might be some schools do it in bigger groups than others. And is there any way you can find out before you choose your school how they are going to administer the test, whether they're going to do it? Like, I know some schools will do first graders one-on-one and others will do it like one-on-five. So is there any way of finding out before you choose a school? I'm just curious if you know about that.
No, unfortunately, there's no real rhyme or reason. It's just each school kind of determines the best way for their school. Uh-huh. So there are no standards in place, unfortunately, to really indicate. You could go up to the school and try to find out information, there's no standardization. So your child, if they're in an upper grade, like a first or second grade, they could be taking the test one-on-one, or they could be taking it in a small group session.
Yeah.
And usually
the
groups are anywhere from like 3 to 5 kids taking the test at one time.
Okay.
And a lot of that just has to do with the cost of administering the test. And that's why one of the reasons the New York City Public Schools in particular chose the OLSAT, just because of the cost factor. When you're dealing with like the Stanford-Binet test or the WIPSI ERB test, those tests get into the hundreds of dollars to administer.
Yeah.
So when you do when you multiply that out with, there's a million students in the New York City school system, when you multiply that out, it becomes a very high expense for the school district. So that was one of the reasons behind them actually selecting the OLSAT as the test of choice, if you will, for the GMT program, along with the bracket. The next question here, Karen, says, we've been having some issues with our son at his school. His curriculum last year did not prepare him for the curriculum at PS 234, which is a school here in Manhattan. So he's behind the other kids. I'm working a lot with him at home. He seems to find writing the most difficult, though he's behind in all areas. I'm doing a lot to help him, working extra hours on the weekend on his lowercase letters and playing educational games. I realize now I should have been doing this all along, but better late than never. I'm also trying to keep his self-esteem high, because I know he feels he's stupid because he can't do something. He doesn't want to try it at all. Now that I've got his self-esteem up, he's trying to read everything around him and also do math problems. I'm really proud of him. But mostly I feel guilty about having spent these last years distracted by my own problems and my own career. But now I know what needs to be done, and I'm doing it. Any more suggestions?
Okay, there's a lot of questions in that one question there. One is, how do you help a child who starts school already behind? How do you build up your child's self-esteem? And how do you not beat yourself up for the things you wish you might have done differently bringing up your child? So I think we'll start with the third question. And I just want to say, because I can hear this mother's frustration at herself for not having done enough in terms, before her child started school. And, I have to say, having raised two kids, and one is in college now and one is in high school, I made so many mistakes along the way, and I can think of so many things I wish I'd done differently. But the good thing in this situation is that you figured out very early on in his school career that he needs help. And the earlier you discover these things, the easier it is to help your child catch up. So figuring out at the kindergarten level that he's behind and he's struggling is the best time to catch it. And you're jumping in. And so I would just say, don't beat yourself up for mistakes that you made in the past. Just really start from today and make the best decisions you can make on your child's behalf. We all as parents do the best we can all the time. And, later sometimes it turns out it wasn't the right thing to do, but you didn't know that. No parent is perfect, and just start from today and do the very best you can. Now, in terms of helping him catch up, one of the things I would say, especially for a kindergartner, is sign him up with, there's a reading program called readingkingdom.com, and that was actually developed by Dr. Marion Blank, who's one of our experts, and she's like one of the foremost authorities in reading in this country. And she has spent a lifetime building, creating this program, and she's just gotten it so that it's an online program. And it's a lot of fun for kids to work on. It both has a reading element and it also has a writing element to it. So I would just say, get him started right away with that, because that'll start to help him learn to read and get caught up to wherever he needs to be. And it's a lot of fun. And as he does it, just give him rewards for working on it and for doing well. So that's readingkingdom.com. I highly recommend that program, and I think it's a great place to start. And if he needs help on math as well, I mean, there are lots of math programs, but I would just start with the reading and the writing, because you don't want to overwhelm him at this point. And in terms of his building up his self-esteem, I would just say that, it's very important that you find genuine ways to praise him for working hard when something is a challenge, for persisting when things are difficult and for not giving up. And so there's a lot of research on that. You don't want to praise a child for, oh, you're so smart, look how bright you are. No, you praise him for his efforts. You praise him for doing his best and working hard. So as you're working with him, trying to help him catch up, just praise him on his hard work and his persistence. And kids are amazing because, they work for praise. They want to be praised. And it's free and it's easy to give. And as parents, we just have to remember that anytime we have a chance to give, genuine praise, we should be giving it. And be specific when you give it. Like, I love the way that you kept working until you could figure out how to draw that lowercase m, and look at what a nice lowercase m you drew, so be as specific as you can. But don't beat yourself up about it. Start from today and you can help them catch up, and it's all going to be fine. You really figured this out early on. That's what I would say.
Yeah,
Michael, do you have anything? Or do
you
want to add?
Just reiterate what you said, Karen. It's about praising the effort and not telling your child, oh, you're so smart. It's about actually identifying the effort the child went through to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
You just want to really focus on the effort that the child is doing, because the effort is, I know it sounds counterintuitive, but you really want to focus on the effort that the child is exerting out when they're actually doing these things, because it gives them it gives them a foundation to build upon that moving forward versus
yeah.
just, you know, blanket statements of like, oh, you're so smart. It's you really want to just focus on like, oh, you did a good job reading this book and, you know, and be very, very specific. And here's what I liked about what you read in this book. You know, what part did you like about what you read? And be very specific in what you're acknowledging for that child. Because
mm-hmm.
when you acknowledge the child, you really want to be specific in each little area that you see improvement in. And that
right.
really reinforces the behaviors.
Mm-hmm. And it teaches them that, you know, if I'm not good at something, I can work at it and I can get better. And that's what you want a child to believe and to know.
Right. And, you know, for my own daughter, you know, she's six. And, you know, part of what we go through as well when we're talking to her, it's like, you know, if she's having, you know, I always reflect on like, oh, remember when you couldn't read this book, you know, 3 months ago when we were struggling with this book, you know, a lot of these words you couldn't pronounce or say or read. And she'd be like,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I'm like, well, what then? You know, I'm like, well, what happened between now and then? Did you just wake up this morning and start reading? And, you know, all these words just came into play. And she was like, no, she was like, I practiced. I'm like, right, you practiced and you worked hard. So it's really showing the child, it's like, and doing some reflection of like either last week or last month, you're like, yo, remember when you couldn't do this? And look what's happened now. It's because you've practiced and you worked hard over the last week or 2 weeks or a month or whatever. And just really reinforce that, oh, yeah, here's what has happened and here's why. It's because I've worked hard and I've practiced at it.
Yeah, that's great.
The next question here, Karen, and we have time for a few more here. I'm having some anxiety about my daughter taking the OLSAT test because I've been getting the report from the teacher that when she reads, she doesn't comprehend in terms of telling back the story. In other words, she's not expressing herself and telling the story back, or back to the story. She gets shut down. The teacher told me also that she doesn't follow instructions because she feels like she knows what to do. So in the long run, she is making mistakes. I feel like she will do the same thing when she is taking the test. What can I do?
Hmm. Well, here's something, I mean, a couple of possibilities. One thing I want to suggest, and this is good for any parent whose child is taking the OLSAT, I think, in terms of really helping to teach listening skills and the skill of paying attention, which we were talking about actually earlier in the call. There's a program called StorySmarts.com, and these are you can buy these. They're downloadable books. It's actually a program. And so I think you get like, you know, you buy like six at once. And each one, it's a little bit hard to explain, but it's a little program where first you read the book to your child and he sees all the pictures and they're in color and you ask him to tell you the story back. And then you show him just the pictures that are in black and white, and you get all this when you download this program, and you say, looking at the pictures, tell me the story, and then you have them tell you the story without the pictures. So it really teaches a child how to listen and pay attention and, you know, and respond appropriately to a question about something they've just heard. And I want to recommend, you can actually go to my website, testingforkindergarten.com/books. And if you go there, you can download one of them for free and you can actually see how it works. But if you like it and your child responds to it, I would recommend that you, you know, maybe buy the first six stories. They're very inexpensive. I mean, I can't remember how much they are, but they're not expensive at all. And you download them and start working with them. And that will be something that will really start to teach her how to listen, respond, pay attention. It's just a good, it's sort of like a really, you know, good sort of in orderly way to teach a child how to listen. And I love the program. So that's called StorySmarts.com. So take a look at that. Another thing I would do is I would make sure that you've done the OLSAT and Bracken home assessments that come with your membership, and I would see how well does she do and how well does she listen. And if she doesn't do well on a particular kind of question, what you need to ask yourself is, why isn't she doing well? I mean, you really have to pay attention here. Is it because she's not listening to your instructions? Is it because she's not listening to the question, or does she not necessarily understand the skill that's being assessed, whether it's sequencing, math, or analogies? And on the home assessments, there are suggestions of what you can be doing if they don't do well on a particular part of the test. So I would say go back and you know, look at these suggestions and try them, you know, to build the skills on the questions where she doesn't do as well. So it might only be on a certain kind of question that you really have to work on. I'm not sure. So the only way you're going to know that is if you try the assessment at home. And the last suggestion I would give you is, because I know you have a copy of Testing for Kindergarten or you're getting one, is to just go back and read Chapter 11, which is all about building listening skills. You know, some of the big ideas in that chapter are you just want to make sure that your child listens and responds appropriately at home, as Michael was talking about before. You know, when you give her directions, you want to make sure she follows. When you ask her something, you make sure she responds, and you don't speak for her in front of other people. You know, so often we ask our child a question, and if they don't answer immediately, we answer for them. Like, don't do that. Let your child answer. And there is one particular exercise that is in the book. It is on page 113, and it's the talking puppet game. And this is something I would suggest, you know, to anyone whose child is taking the OLSAT. It's where you work with little finger puppets and you tell a little story and then you have your child repeat back what the story was. And for the first parent who asked the question that Michael, the very first question I think we had today, which was tips on getting a child to listen for the OLSAT, this particular game on page 113 of my book, I think will be very helpful for teaching a child to listen and pay attention when they're going to get OLSAT questions, but it'll be a little more fun for them. So it's, you know, you can't sit there and do OLSAT questions all day long. This is more of a little fun game, but it will be really reinforce the listening skill.
Okay, great. Those are excellent insights, Karen. So thank you. I think we're going to wrap up the questions that we received. And
did anybody
open it up?
Yeah, I was going to say if anyone has any questions that's on the call before we take any more of the ones people sent us.
Yeah, if you have questions, just unmute yourself, and if you are on mute, and we can answer those questions live right now. Okay, it doesn't look like we have any questions today.
I heard someone.
Yeah, hi. I have a question. With the test, are the directions written on the exam itself? In other words, can the child actually see the directions, or are they just read to the child?
When you're talking about the directions, are you talking about like the actual test questions?
Oh, I mean, yeah, the questions that are read to them.
And the younger, how old's your child?
Oh, he's 5.
No, it'll be verbal.
Okay, so he doesn't see it at all. It's just listening.
No. Yeah,
is he reading already?
Like
he reads.
Wow.
He's hard or deaf in one ear.
Mm.
But he's still. But the bottom line is that he reads everything himself anyway. So
if he's deaf in one ear, does he need any special kind of accommodation in terms of?
No, just as long as the person isn't on the deaf side, because he'll still hear. But it makes it a little bit more, I guess, challenging. But I mean, you know, if he uses a cell phone, he doesn't put it to that ear. But outside of that, he has no problem.
He's okay.
Is he in kindergarten right now or pre-K?
Yes, he is.
Is he in kindergarten in the public schools?
No, he's not in New York City right now. That's the other part of the problem. But hopefully they'll be here before the testing starts and all of that. So he's like in a private school, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that was my question. Because since he reads, it makes it so much simpler. But
I'm just curious, if you have a child who has a disability like that with, you know, not hearing in one ear, if he does read, can they allow the child to read the instructions, or can accommodations be made, do you know? Or that might be something we have to look into. I'm not sure.
Yeah, we can look into that if you'd like for us to. I know for sure, since It sounds like he would be taking the test on one of the weekend testing sessions. You know, you or the guardian or parent or whoever who goes with him to take the test, I would definitely, before he goes into the testing room, talk to the person there and indicate his situation and tell them, I don't know, you know, whichever ear he can't hear from, if they can make sure that he's really listening closely because he has a hearing impairment, to see if they can, you know, accommodate that way. I'm not sure on the actual form when you fill it out online, if they ask if there's any type of disability, they might. So have you already registered for the test?
No, I have not. I'm his grandmother. His parents mm-hmm. will actually do it. I'm just the listening person. You know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I would when they register for the test on the DOE site, there may be an indication there if the child has any type of disabilities, and you can probably indicate it there. If not, I would definitely, when he actually takes the test, indicate to the testing facility manager or the test proctor as they're walking, escorting him into the testing situation, that he does have a hearing impairment on ear. I would relay that to them.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Are there any other questions from audience members? Okay, Karen, did you have any final thoughts or words or?
No, I think we covered a lot today, and you know, and if you have if something strikes you after we hang up and you have a question, just send it our way, because we collect all the questions and try to address them when we do these calls. So. If something hits you and you're just wondering, just send us an email and we'll pick it up next week. You know, if we don't get you an answer right away, we'll make sure that we include it in the calls.
Okay, great. We thank everyone for attending today. And again, if you have any questions, you can email us at help@testymom.com, or if you have questions directly for Karen, Karen@testymom.com, or myself, Michael@testymom.com. Thank you, everyone, for attending, and we'll chat with you next week. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.